On this episode of Thinking Inside the Box, we kick high and KO through Dead or Alive 3. Hello, everybody. I'm Excalibur.
And I'm your co-host, Off Mike.
Today, we'll be reviewing Dead or Alive 3.
Oh, yes. This title is Got You Either Dead or It's Got You Alive.
There is no in between. I was kind of excited to get into this one. I had never played a Dead or Alive game before this one. And it was a little bit of a different experience for me. And I've played plenty of other fighting-based games, you know, like the Street Fighter series and Mortal Kombat, as well as Tekken, and really enjoyed those titles, so I wasn't sure what I was getting into with this one.
Yeah, I'd say this title, for me, this is my first Dead or Alive experience, too, which we all know what Dead or Alive mostly is about. Everyone just praises it for the physics, let's just say that. And I've played Mortal Kombat. I think pretty much everyone, if you've picked up a fighting game, Mortal Kombat's probably been that game. So this being sort of a competitor, along with Street Fighter and Tekken, all those types of fighting combat games, this is sort of a different take. It has to be different because they want you to look at their game and wonder what makes our game better than the rest. So,
yeah.
As you'll hear, we have a pretty strong opinion. So let's go ahead into our info.
All right. Today's game, Dead or Alive 3, was developed by Team Ninja, published by Tecmo. General features are single player, multiplayer, 480p, and Dolby 5.1 surround sound. It features no online play. It is rated T for mature sexual themes and violence. It is an action fighting 3D genre game. Released November 15th, 2001 for the Xbox. It was an exclusive. The overview is Dead or Alive returns to take fighters to the next level. The third installment of the series features new characters, interactive environments, and all new fighting effects. Explore the many expansive levels in single player mode or battle against up to four players in multiplayer mode. The destructible environments, kinetic tag battle feature, and all new fighters make Dead or Alive 3 a worthy entry in the series. What you got, Soft Mike?
Alright, so Dead or Alive 3 features 16 characters, which 3 of them are new to the series, hidden extras, specular lighting effects, volumetric fog and grass, clothing and muscle movement that accurately responds, and interactive environments. Up to 4 players can fight in Dead or Alive 3's tag battle mode. That's our general information. Let's get into our publisher and developer.
Sure thing. Team Ninja, being our developer, was formed by Tamana.
We're gonna botch our Japanese.
Yeah, we're gonna be terrible at this. Tamanobu Itagagi. That sounds about as good as it's gonna get. Tamanobu Itagagi is a Japanese video game designer best known for creating the Dead or Alive series and also reviving the Ninja Gaiden franchise in 2004. Joining Tecmo in 1992, Itagagi produced 2 video game franchises that were commercial successes and earned him several promotions. He headed Tecmo's development team, Team Ninja, and sat on the executive board. He left the company, however, after 16 years of service, filing a lawsuit against it for withholding bonus pay. His new team at Valhalla Game Studios, comprising of other Team Ninja members, worked on a new game called The Devil's Third, and that's basically where they split. In 2008, the action-adventure game Ninja Gaiden 2 for the Xbox 360 was published by Microsoft Studios, making it the first game created by Team Ninja to not be published by Tecmo. Tecmo Koei later released an enhanced version of Ninja Gaiden 2 on the PlayStation 3 as Ninja Gaiden Sigma 2. Team Ninja continued on and co-developed multiple titles for Nintendo. In 2010, they co-developed Metroid, the new Metroid action-adventure game for Nintendo's Wii console, titled Metroid: The Other M. A playable stage from Other M later appeared in Dead or Alive Dimensions. While being well known for the development of the Dead or Alive series of games, Sega AM2 has since collaborated with Team Ninja on the development of the franchise since 2012, starting with Dead or Alive 5, including the updated versions of the game such as Dead or Alive 5 Last Round and Dead or Alive 6. They've gone on from there to also collaborate with Omega Force for Hyrule Warriors, an action game set in the Legend of Zelda universe, in 2014. In 2013, following a reconstruction of Koei Tecmo, Team Ninja was split into two distinct development teams. They are dubbed Ichigaya Development Group 1, led by Ninja Gaiden Sigma director Yasuki Hayashi, and Ikigaya Development Group 2, led by Fatal Frame producer Kaisuke Kikuki. In 2016, Team Ninja garnered public attention after the decision not to release Dead or Alive Extreme 3 in North America or Europe, resulting in a controversy with the game industry about the sexualized portrayal of female characters within their games. Sony Interactive Entertainment CEO Shuhei Yoshida said in a statement, "It's due to cultural differences. The West has its own thinking about how to depict women in games media, which is different from Japan." In 2017, Team Ninja released their own action-adventure game, Nioh, which has received multiple revisions and has been in development since 2004 to great critical response. They released Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3, The Black Order, for the Nintendo Switch in 2019, as well as Dead or Alive 6. Team Ninja released the prequel to Nioh, Nioh 2, in March of 2020. And they also released a compilation, Ninja Gaiden Master Collection, in June of 2021. So they're still going to today, and seem like they have a couple of strong series. What do you got, Soft Mike?
All right, so for Tecmo, we have this. Tecmo is known for the Captain, Sabusa, Dead or Alive, Deception, Fatal Frame, Gallop Racer, Monster Rancher, Ninja Gaiden, Rygar, Star Force, and Tecmo Bowl video game series. When it was still called the company Tekken, the company that released arcade games such as Bomb Jack, Gridiron Fight, and Tekken World Cup, the company was actually founded in July 31st, 1967, as a supplier of cleaning equipment. By 1969, it actually started selling amusement equipment. In 2009, Tecmo merged with Kawai to form the holding company Tecmo Kawai Holdings and was operated as a subsidiary until its disbandment in early 2010. Tecmo Company Limited, which was merged with Kawai in 2009, was itself a combination of two companies, the Imperial Trustee Corporation, founded in 1964, and Nippon Yacht Co. Limited, which was founded in 1967. In July 1969, the company started to sell entertainment amusement equipment and opened its first self-managed amusement facility in March 1970 in the Chiba Prefecture. In October 1977, the Imperial Trustee Corporation was renamed Tekken Limited, with the trade name changed as well to Tekken. Tekken is derived from the name Taikoku Kanza. In March 1981, a U.S. division was inaugurated in Los Angeles as U.S. Tekken Incorporated. A month later, in April 1981, Tekken released in Japan its first internally developed arcade video game titled The Pleiades, which was distributed in America by Century. Then on January 8, 1986, Tekken Limited officially changed its name to Tecmo Company Limited. Tecmo's first internally developed home video game was Mighty Bomb Jack and was released for the Family Computer in April 1986.
It was released on the Famicom.
Yep. The other company, Nippon Yacht Company Limited, on July 31st, 1967, the Nippon Yacht Corporation was established to handle the real estate of ships. And on December 6, 1982, Nippon Yacht Company was renamed to Tekken Electronics Corporation. Then the merger of Tecmo and Tekken Electronics Corporation to focus on console video games. On April 1, 1987, Tecmo Corporation Limited merged with its sister company, Tekken Electronics Corporation. The former's name was retained for the merger, but the latter was actually a surviving company. By the turn of the decade, Tecmo was firmly in the camp of video game consoles. Though still involved in the arcade industry, much of the success was achieved on the Nintendo Entertainment System with titles such as Ninja Gaiden, Tecmo Bowl, and the Japan-only Super Yuzumo. When Sony released its PlayStation in the 1990s, Tecmo joined the endeavor, which set the tone for the series, such as Dead or Alive, Monster Rancher, Deception, and Gallop Racer. Tecmo entered the second section of the Tokyo Stock Exchange in March 2000 and transitioned to the first section in March 2001. On July 18, 2006, Tecmo's founder and chairman, Yoshihito Kakihara, died of interstitial pneumonia at the age of 67.
Ooh.
It delisted on March 26, 2009, right before the merger with Kawai had taken effect. On June 3, 2008, Team Ninja head Tomonobu Itagaki resigned from the company and filed a 145 million yen lawsuit, which is equal to $1.4 million, for unpaid completion bonuses and emotional distress. This followed another lawsuit that was filed on June 16th of the same year, by two plaintiffs on behalf of Tecmo's 300 employees for unpaid wages amounting to 8.3 million yen. On August 29, 2008, Square Enix made plans for a friendly takeover of Tecmo by purchasing shares at 30% premium with a total bid of 22.3 billion yen. On September 4th, 2008, Tecmo officially declined the takeover proposal. Tecmo subsequently engaged with talks with Koei about a possible merger between the two companies and agreed November 2008 to merge on April 1st, 2009 to form Tecmo Koei Holdings. On January 26, 2009, the two companies officially announced the merger, and the holding company formed on April 1, 2009 as planned. Tecmo initially continued to be operated as a subsidiary and brand name of Tecmo Koei Holdings, and in January 2010, the United States subsidiaries of Tecmo Incorporated and Koei America merged to create Tecmo Koei American Corporation. Tecmo was officially declared disbanded in Japan on April 1, 2010, as part of a major international reorganization within Tecmo Koei Holdings. Relevant intellectual properties were slated to be further managed by Koei Tecmo Games. On March 15, 2010, roughly 2 weeks before Tecmo was officially dissolved, its internal development studio was spun off as a separate company under the name of Tecmo Company Limited, a wholly owned subsidiary of Koei Tecmo Games. The new company was initially called Tekkon to avoid confusion with the other company that was still operating for another 2 weeks. When Tecmo disbanded on April 1, 2010, Tekkon was renamed Tecmo. This was short-lived as the new Tecmo, along with the new Koei video game developers, were both dissolved and merged into Koei Tecmo Games a year later on April 1, 2011. Despite having been dissolved twice as a legal entity, Tecmo continued to appear on labels on video games by Koei Tecmo Games until another corporate reorganization in 2016 abandoned the brand name for good. Video games by Koei Tecmo Games marketed with the Tecmo logotype included Dead or Alive 5, Ninja Gaiden 3, Razor's Edge, and Deception 4, The Nightmare Princess. So that is our history of our Tecmo publisher.
Okay. But good information. Very informative. There's a lot there to take in on these companies. They definitely move around quite a bit. They're very flexible, very fluid. And, you know, these series that they produce, a lot of the time, just keep going. They find somebody or some group of people that become their lifeblood. And we're seeing that with a lot of these different series, like Ninja Gaiden and the Dead or Alive series that came out of just one person's imagination. And that's some of the best stuff. You know, some of these guys that are just so creative, and the things that come out of their minds are just instant hits. Like Hideo Kojima.
Yes, Hideo Kojima.
Hideo Kojima. He is another one of those visionaries that is just wholly revered for his ideas and the things that come out of his mind. It's no doubt that the person behind the Dead or Alive series and reviving the Ninja Gaiden series has the same kind of creative prowess. And it shows the design of the game, the direction definitely flows, and so is the series. I've seen, you know, gameplay and clips here and there of these different series over time, and you know, the fact that they're still going to today is a testament to the idea behind it and the passion that kept these series going, as well as the fans, of course.
We do have some extra trivia.
Oh boy.
So, despite being an Xbox exclusive game, Dead or Alive 3 features no only on Xbox stand. This game also has won 3 awards, one by a group called 4Players, which ranked this number 7 best Xbox game of the year by Reader's Vote, and then GameSpy, their awards, they thought Dead or Alive 3 was 2001 Xbox fighting game of the year, and also 2001 best graphics of the year.
It's kind of hard to be contested in those categories when it's the only one that has one of the categories.
Yeah, I know.
Do we have anything else to add?
We're ready to wrap up this and go on.
All right, on to our next segment.
It's time for the X-Ray, where we dive into the main features and in-depth gameplay.
Okay, getting into Dead or Alive 3, we have our classic developer and publisher logos, followed by the press start to enter the main menu.
Oh, you forgot our legal agreement we had to read before we got into the game.
Oh, yeah. This game has a very lengthy legal rundown documentation to follow through before you access the actual game. They were definitely very stringent on letting you know that any kind of reproduction of this game would be under extreme scrutiny. A lot harsher on the pushing copyright. That was something that caught our eye. Once you get through that, you're in the main menu after going through the press start screen, and the background is an animated background featuring seagulls flying through the air and a panning camera that just repeats the same cycle along a beach at dusk. It's kind of nice to see. The menu music isn't bad. It's very Japanese and mellow. It also does get pretty repetitive pretty fast. The first option that you will see is the option of the Dead or Alive 3 story mode, followed by Time Attack, Survival Mode, Tag Battle Mode, Team Battle Mode, Versus Mode, Watch Mode, Sparring Mode, and Options. In Options, you can change the game settings of the difficulty from Easy to Normal to Hard, and then finally Very Hard. You can change how many match points there are. You can change the size of your life gauge from Small, Normal, Large to Largest, which I thought was kind of a funny way to put it. You can also set a round time limit from no limit all the way up to 99 seconds. And then you also have a button to reset all settings to the default setting. In your audio settings, there's your standard audio, which would be the music, sound effects, and voice, followed by your ability to switch through all the tracks, with their name for each track displayed at the bottom of the screen. You can go through all of the 23 tracks for this game and listen to all of them in their entirety from the options menu. Language settings are pretty standard. You can only switch between English or Japanese for the subtitles and for the menu. In the controller options is where it gets really interesting. You select that and you see the Duke controller modeled on screen, more of a artist's render than an actual 3D modeled version as Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2X had. But what's interesting here is you have four different presets for the buttons, and then lastly, you have a fully mappable option where you can toggle any button to be whatever you would like it to be on the controller. And lastly, as always in every one of the menus, you have a button that switches everything back to default. I thought the full button mapping was really cool.
That is a advanced feature, I will say that.
Yeah, you really have full control over every button. Video settings, it's a little bit more advanced as well. You can adjust the gamma, brightness, and contrast of your game. You can also check out your ranking in the game by looking at the stats of your time attack, the ranking of your survival, and the ranking of your individual characters. Lastly, it's that lengthy software information and legal documentation that you went through as you booted up the game. Now, for your different modes, you have the story mode, which the standard story mode goes straight into a character select, for which you start your actual story. Time attack mode prompts you with the challenge of finishing the game in the shortest time possible. Survival mode prompts you with the challenge to fight and maximize your point score to try and see how far you can survive an endless wave of enemies. And tag battle mode is very interesting, where you can choose for two characters to play and to tag in or out at any given time during a match. Best 2 out of 3 wins. In team battle mode, it's the same concept, except for more like a tower-based system, where you start from the bottom and eventually get to the top. You advance from the lowest rank to the highest rank or to the number one position and face off against the number one team to knock them out. More like a championship mode, really. Next, you have versus mode, where you can fight against other players. That's basically the multiplayer. You have your watch mode that you just basically get to watch other characters fight each other. It's not that exciting. Then you, lastly, before the options, which we've already gone over, you can do the sparring mode, which this mode is basically for training of advanced techniques in this game to teach you the controls and how to execute the different various moves and combos and tricks. It's actually very intuitive and a little bit difficult. It definitely does challenge you to an extent. And it's something I would suggest anyone who's starting this game out for the first time to try to get into, to get an idea and a feel for the controls of this game. A lot of games don't come with tutorials, or if they do have tutorials, they're really not that thorough, and they're not that great. So that was definitely an appreciated feature. Very thorough. This game also features the ability to soft reset the game from any point in your playthrough back to the main menu by simply just holding start and back at the same time for 3 seconds. Once done correctly, you will be returned to the main menu without having to exit the game. All right, so that's it with our menu and our different various modes. Do you want to tell us about the story, Soft Mike?
Yeah, so Dead or Alive 3 we'll start with our prologue, is Ryu Hayabusa, the super ninja, put a stop to the evil doings of Tengu Mangekyo Bo. But it was too late to stop the Tengu of Destruction from triggering a massive worldwide collapse. The collapse churns up a dense cloud that covers the entire planet in a shroud of darkness and fear. Doatek has gone astray, turning into the hunting grounds for power-hungry scam artists. This is when Doatek's development department, a fortress for state-of-the-art military technology, witnesses the success of a genius. Following Project Alpha and Project Epsilon, the ever-ambitious Dr. Victor Donovan completes the Omega Project, producing a new superhuman, Genra. This man, who was once leader of the Hagenmon Ninja, is no longer human. He, or it, is a force of singular and unprecedented capabilities. A slaughterhouse has now been provided as the exclusive domain of the Omega Superhuman. It is a realm that has come to be known as the World Combat Championship, Dead or Alive 3. Let's get into our characters. So in this game, the first person that we see is a lady named Kasumi. Kasumi is a Kunoichi, which is a female ninja, who was ordained as a leader of the Mugen Tenshin style. Instead of accepting this position, she became a runaway shinobi, so that she might avenge her brother, Hayate, who was partially paralyzed by Doatek. Day after day, she is forced to defend herself from attempts on her life by highly skilled assassins. Then one day, Kasumi learns that Hayate is to be at the DOA tournament. Though she finally meets her long-lost brother in this last tournament, it is impossible for runaway shinobi ever to return home in peace. Then we have meet the character Ryu Hayabusa. Ryu is the modern super ninja and is the best friend of Kasumi's brother Hayate. In the last tournament, he successfully brought down Mangekyo, the feared Tengu of Destruction, who had brought chaos to the whole world. But before he allows himself to relax in a new era of relative peace, Ryu Hayabusa must enter the tournament again, this time to save the world from Genra, an evil being created by the Doatek. Hitomi is the daughter of a Japanese mother and a German karate master. She has been practicing karate under her father's tutelage since she was just a child. Hitomi has always wanted to fight in DOA in order to test her formidable skills against the real world, and her father has finally allowed her to participate. There must be many powerful opponents in this world, Hitomi tells herself, as she begins practicing her craft with a new degree of enthusiasm. Zack is the funky dude who taught himself Muay Thai, returns to DOA. One day, after spending all of his winnings from the last DOA tournament, Zack realizes he has a problem. He has forgotten to do what he always wanted to do, and that was enjoy the many luxuries of a Las Vegas vacation. In order to whip up some cash for his Vegas trip, Zack is back in his combat mode, heading for the DOA. Genfu is another character who fought in the DOA to obtain the money needed to cure his sick granddaughter, Mylin, who was suffering the ravages of a rare disease. Thanks to the prize money, Mylin is growing better and better every day. However, one last surgery, which will require a vast sum of money, is needed to cure her completely. To save the life of his granddaughter, Genfu fights once again. Brad Wong is another character that one day, the old master Chen, great teacher of Zubaizan Quan, says to Brad, "Bring me the legendary drink. The name is Genra." These words are a riddle to Brad Wong. He begins his journey in search of the mysterious Genra. After 3 years of wandering, he finds himself in a fighting tournament. Then we have Tina Armstrong, who is a superstar in the world of women's wrestling, and the only daughter of the professional wrestler Bass. She is a woman of boundless ambition who thirsts for even greater fame and celebrity. Although she finally made her debut as a model following the last tournament, she now wants to be an actress, so Tina decides to enter the DOA one more time. Bass Armstrong is an undefeated bad guy professional wrestler. Although Bass Armstrong has already retired from his job, he enters DOA to stop his daughter Tina from winning the tournament. Bass loves his daughter very much, but he's always wanted Tina to become a professional wrestler. Hearing that Tina wants now to become an actress, he's extremely upset. "Hey, I don't remember allowing you to become a model." "Okay, young lady, you're grounded," he says. Leon, which is a Italian mercenary, once was told by Roland, a woman thief of the Silk Road, as she died saying, "The man I love is the strongest man in the world." In order to justify his lover's last words, Leon entered the last DOA, only to be defeated. But memories of Roland still haunting him, Leon declares, "I shall win this time," pledging his all upon the grave of a woman whose body lies buried beneath the desert floor. Bayman is a professional assassin who acquired his commando-style martial arts in the military. Donovan, who was once requested the task of assassinating famed Douglas, sent a sniper to dispose of Bayman, but Bayman easily quashed this feeble attempt on his life. In retaliation against his former client, Bayman decides he'll show up at the DOA. Jan Lee is a fighter without cause, still walks a lonely path, though the reputation of Jan Lee, the dragon as he's called, is universal. His search for a stronger enemy never ends. His presence is still prominent in DOA, and the battle cry can still be heard. Lai Fang is known to be as the young genius of Tai Chi Quan. Ever since Jan Lee saved her from a gang of thugs, she has entered DOA to test her skills against his. Jan Lee has demonstrated his superior skills in the last two tournaments, but Lai Fang won't let that stop her. This time, I'm going to beat him. Christy. She possesses all the characteristics required of an assassin. This cold-blooded woman has undergone the ultimate adaptation, excelling in the art of Shi Quan, which she employs to the fullest. Christy has been hired by Donovan, the leader of the Doatex anti-Douglas faction, and enters the DOA in order to keep an eye on Helena. Helena is the illegitimate daughter of the coupling between famed Douglas, which was the leader of Doatech, and his mistress. Whether she likes it or not, she is dragged into the intertwined conspiracies within the huge Doatech organization as the only living relative of Douglas. She's captured at last by the anti-Douglas faction of Doatech, and Donovan challenges her to win in the DOA tournament. If she really wants the truth, she has no choice but to fight. Hayate is the brother of Kasumi and Ayan, and also the 18th leader of the Mugen Tenshin style. He was the subject of Doatech's experimental superhuman project, Project Epsilon, in which he lost his memory. But in the last tournament, he recovered his memory and was officially ordained as leader of the Mugen Tenshin style. He is now set to enter DOA again in order to defeat Genra, the superhuman project that was created as a puppet of Doatech's Project Omega. Ayan is the half-sister of Kasumi and Hayate, Ayan's former teacher and foster parent. Genra, the leader of the Mugen Tenshin style in Haijin Mon, has disappeared. Ayan, now the most powerful shinobi in Haijin Mon, learns that Genra has been turned into a puppet by Doatech in his dastardly Omega project. Seeing what has become of her beloved father figure, Ayan realizes that fate commands her to put Genra out of his misery. So there we have it on our story of our characters.
There's a lot of information there, and a lot of backup story too for each one of these characters. Very interesting.
Oh yes.
They all have, like, their own purpose in life.
Yes, they have each a story or plot that guides them, which was non-existent to the actual gameplay. The story in the manual, it's actually very helpful.
Right. Yeah, their causes are all the typical storytelling in games like these. They're noble and for something. To even have any kind of an idea as to what is going on with any character or fact of the matter, the game's story, this game requires you to read the manual. Is all this information in the manual?
To a degree. I mean, you have like all the story info is in the manual. It just goes over the characters, like kind of background.
Let's talk gameplay. Going off of the character select and straight into the most important mode of all, story mode. What do we find ourselves doing, Soft Mike?
Well, I chose Kasumi. It's the first character that you have. That's like default pick.
Okay.
And yes. When I chose Kasumi, you then get to choose the costume, which is kind of an irrelevant feature because, I mean, you either like the costume or you don't. I think it doesn't matter because, I mean, it doesn't give you any other advantage. It's just a preference on visual quality. So, right. Choose your costume. You go into the first fight. Your first fight and second fight are always a random encounter. It's always different area, different person or AI that you're fighting, and usually it goes by pretty quickly. Almost every time we got into a fight, it was actually I pretty much dominated the AI within a couple. I think it was less than 30 seconds. So that's how fast the first two rounds go. The third fight is a scripted fight. And this is the same also for every character. Your third fight is always a scripted fight with the same character. And there's always a cutscene that leads up to it to explain sort of what that character is doing there. Some of them, they don't make sense to why the character is there. It just sort of has a cutscene explaining character, background, a sort of way, why that character's in the tournament. Kind of like picking up the story as you go. This is really the first inkling that you have as to a story of anything. So this is why it's a little bit confusing, because your story kind of starts the third fight in. Just these two people randomly came out of nowhere and wanted to beat me up. I had to kick their butt to get to this point, finally learn that I'm a assassin that's getting tracked, or I'm a ninja that's getting tracked by assassins, and I got to constantly fight my way to survive. So you fight the third person, which I believe it's Ayan, which is the half-sister of Kasumi. You fight her, you beat her in the forest, and then you go into the fourth and fifth fight, which are also random. It's always different, and always a different AI. The sixth fight is the champion of your character's story, so to speak, or sort of like the climax of what they were supposed to get to. And this, in Kasumi's story, it's Hayate. So she finally gets to see her brother, who she apparently was sought after this whole time. And he's the leader of the ninja group that she had abandoned, which she can never come back. So she has to fight Hayate, because Hayate's honor toward the group he's in, he has to fight her in order to relinquish her of her sin that she had done to the ninja group. So you beat him. When you beat him, then you go to fight the final boss, which randomly out of nowhere, you're in like a hell realm. You're in a realm where everything's on fire, and you have this gigantic, like, almost like Morrowind. It's like an Elder Scrolls character who has, like, max stats, completely full body armor and crazy skills. It's like when you take your character and do all the side quests, and then you finally do the first real quest, and you're just way overpowered for it. That's basically the character that you're up against. So you end up in this hell realm up against this guy, and his name is Omega. And you're like, who the heck is this? Where did this come from? Why is this? Why am I fighting this person? Because they have a double-bladed lightsaber, and they can throw electrical blasts and flame attacks at you. And then not only that, but then if you damage them and knock them on the ground, they do a area of attack.
Some kind of a centralized explosion.
Yeah, which
shockwave.
You're near it, it knocks you down and it damages you
a lot.
Yeah, so it's a very confusing. Now, when you beat him, then you unlock this cutscene for your character, sort of showing them what they did, or what was it they did as they celebrated their win, so to speak. And with Kasumi, it was her basically sleeping on branches high up in the forests, with her daydreaming about ninjas throwing ninja stars after her, because she's being hunted. So she has no worry, I guess. So she's basically just daydreaming about it. And that's sort of how what all happened. So that's all you had for Kasumi. So it was just like, so getting that cutscene is all you had, and then you're kind of like left to go, is that it?
Right.
You know, and you do that, and you sort of like, that is, it puts you in a perspective of, you go online, you go on Google, and you're like, why is the campaign so short?
I think it was more of a story about fulfilling your destiny or accomplishing a great feat that is part of something that is more than yourself and implies a great deal of honor in doing such, which is your typical Japanese storytelling. They executed that well, as in what their culture likes to portray of a character. But the way it was executed did leave you wanting more, like you were saying, with, you know, you trying to figure out why the campaign was so short, or what even was the context that, you know, you were even doing anything for. It might be a bad approach to jump into games like we do generally without reading any kind of information before jumping in, or checking out the manual and understanding how to use the game. But like I said, I do it for my playthroughs, mostly to see if the game properly and adequately clues me in and teaches me not only about how the story works, but also how the game fundamentally works, to train me on how to perform the necessary tasks and functions or mechanics that are built into this game to get me from the start to the end as painlessly as possible, depending on my skill level or, I guess, ability to complete the tasks in order to finish the game. The way that this game executed that, at least for storytelling's sake, was definitely poor in my experience, but teaching you how to play the game with that sparring mode was very intuitive and did a great job of showing you the basic controls. When I did that mode versus just jumping into the fighting, I was able to understand that there, you know, even though I didn't memorize certain controls and try to do combos specifically, I did have a ground level idea on how the controls worked, and certain buttons did cause certain movements and combos to trigger. So I was able to get a fundamental idea of how to start building on that and try and innovate my own control and game style. For my playthrough, I started with Christy. That story unfolds kind of in the exact same way that yours does there. And it left me with a scene that just boggled my mind as to why it would even be in the game and how it made it into the game, given its rating. By defeating the final boss, basically you're given a treat versus any kind of a virtuous ending. You get to experience Christy in the shower with a panning camera from her ankles, panning all the way up to the top of her shoulders, showing her completely nude from the rear. And further from there, you watch her walk down her hallway in nothing but her undergarments to sit on the couch and watch a news story unfolding on her laptop. There really isn't much going on there, and it's very much, it kind of just left me wondering why that even had to be in the game. I felt it was kind of tasteless, but once again, these games have come under a lot of scrutiny, also clapping back from the developers and publishers of this series, saying that it's just cultural differences and to get over it. Overall, as far as a story goes, there still wasn't a strong grasp onto what this game was about. Even playing a different character completely, I thought I would get a different context or idea. And I was still at the end confused, and even more confused about the kind of scene that I had witnessed. Just randomly, the boss falls down on the ground and is KO'd, and then it just instantly snapped to a shower scene that was very, like, neck-snappingly what? Mm-hmm. So what else we got on gameplay?
Multiplayer is, as you kind of expected, duel it out versus each other, or fight against AI. Fight with AI with tag battle mode. For a fighting game, I felt like I did a great job at least explaining the features that you had. That I don't think I could have asked for anything different besides like online play, maybe.
System link at the least would have been awesome.
Yes. But yeah, I think the ability to play four player was also nice. You know, if you really wanted to have a party, you're not restricted on screen size and things like that. Because everything right. is all
that's a good thing.
Everything's all right there on the same screen, so there's no split screen problems. I feel like, you know, it's just sort of just like your general fighting game. There's really nothing else I could say about it. It's very generic in elements, I'd say, that I think anyone should be able to understand the concepts that we've described.
Yeah, for the most part, the story mode is as follows, with the exception of one different cutscene in the middle per each character that's specific, possibly. I don't know if they all have a specific cutscene for them in the middle of their story, if you want to call it that. And then, of course, their final movie that you unlock when you complete the entire game with each character. Once you've played one, you've played them all.
Yeah.
There's characters with different moves that you can execute, but in the end, it's all really the same to me.
Yeah, some moves are faster than others, depending on the character. Some characters are really good at counter moves, some are really good at kick attacks, some are really good at fast melee punches and things like that. And you just sort of have to experiment and play.
Yes, if you really want to dig into this game and are a fighter type genre player, you would probably feel pretty in your element with this game. Although the game really let you down on a lot of elements that make a game interesting, it did, however, really do a good job with the core mechanics and the graphics, which is another thing that really matters to a game's quality as well. The graphics were definitely very nice and crisp. The models and textures did seem a little flat and bland in areas, but overall, it definitely did a good job of pulling off crisp models. I mean, you can't ask for much better looking rendered faces when coming from Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2X.
Oh, yeah. That's a night and day.
Yeah, character models. It's like two generations of difference between the art of the models for Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2X versus this game. There's no comparison. But the controls were something else that I can speak on. They were definitely tight, and they had that frame-perfect execution feel to them that fighting games expect of you when it comes to executing perfect tricks and making combos tie together or chain together. You have to have frame-perfect execution. And when going through the sparring mode, it really becomes evident that the controls aren't bad, and they do function as they are intended to, but they require skill to be executable. That's where this game kind of shines. It's core mechanics and its graphics, really.
Yep. I'd say it'd be a good idea to, I guess, explain what the intended developer goal of this game is. And evidently, the way to completely beat the game is to play the story mode with every character in the roster. And once you've done that, you've unlocked all 16 endings, you finally get the credits, which is a surprising venture that it's done with Aerosmith music.
Right.
So, yeah, that's sort of that's just how the game goes. I mean, it's nothing really spectacular. You really have to just love fighting games.
Yeah, the game really doesn't offer you too much more. The last thing that we experienced while playing the game was multiplayer. We decided to dive into that, as we usually do, as the last thing that we decide to check out before concluding our playthrough and determining that we're ready to give our review. We started off with going ahead and just jumping right into the tag battle mode, as we kind of felt that versus mode would be a little bit pointless. Me and Soft Mike are pretty much evenly matched in this game. We knew that right off the bat when we started playing it, and both of us finished it in relatively the same amount of time on the same difficulties.
Yep.
So yeah, versus mode just didn't seem like it was going to be advantageous for us to really dig into. So we skipped and went ahead to tag battle mode, where we tried that feature out because that was the most interesting one to us, where we were able to choose our character and then our companion character to tag out with, which I think you can choose. You also choose the CPU, or does the CPU choose
you
themselves?
You can only choose CPU if we separated our players.
Oh, right.
Like, if it was me and you on a team, it randomly selected the AI.
Okay.
We did, what, 3 rounds? The first 2 rounds, we didn't understand how the game mode worked initially, so...
Right.
We were, like, randomly... Yeah, we didn't know the controls. We were randomly tagging each other in and out.
We were pretty much button mashing and jumping back and forth, going, what just happened?
Yep. But we ended up winning the first 2 rounds. On very hard.
Yeah, it was easy. Yeah. Yes, because I forgot to change the difficulty. I thought it was really easy to beat the first set of enemies. And what was it? We got through 2 sets of enemies before you mentioned and realized that it was still on very hard. And I don't know if, you know, it was just a little bit of RNG or what, but it was extremely easy to KO the competition in tag battle mode, you know, between the two different matches that we played before we played our final and third match, or fourth. We had really a piece of cake time dealing with and dispatching those guys. Mm-hmm. So really, honestly, it kind of goes against the favor of the game having a difficulty that is basically cheatable, where we can just randomly button mash and fumble our way through on the hardest difficulty. It didn't really impress me much. It actually was a little bit of a detractor. Thinking back on that, a little bit of a hard thing to let go, I would say, is knowing that the game can just be blundered through versus requiring any kind of real skill to complete. And this being, you know, a prestigious fighting series, I would expect that of it. So there are ways that this game did let you down, but there's also ways in the gameplay that it really lifted itself up and set itself apart. All right, you got anything else for us, Soft Mike?
I think that's pretty much it. We've covered every inch of the game, it seemed like.
Okay. I think we're on to our next segment, all right, then.
Get ready for X Marks the Spot. The comprehensive look at game secrets and Easter eggs.
All right, so RX marks the spot. Now, this game is really, there's no cheats available, which, sorry, cheaters. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. Our first thing is we have unlockable costumes, which was severely limited in the American release and the European release. The PAL and NTSCJ players actually got to have a lot more costumes than we have. But have no fear, because if you have the Xbox Magazine November 2001 edition, it came with a Xbox booster disc. That booster disc, you actually could put into your console, and it was basically a demo disc, but then you could also download all available costumes that were in the PAL and NTSCJ version to your console to access those costumes in the full game if you had purchased it, which is actually really cool because there's a ton of different costumes. But the costumes are just that. They're just costumes. So really, I can't have much more to say about it than that. There are a couple costumes which you unlock. First one I see is Kasumi, but you can only get her third costume by completing the exercise mode in the sparring mode. Zach, the boxer who's all about gambling money and stuff, he has a third costume which is unlockable by getting 20 or more wins in the survival mode. Then I believe the only other costume that you unlock is Ayn's costume, which Ayn is an unlockable character. So Ayn is the alternate reality version of Hayate from Dead or Alive 2. He's the one that I guess Kasumi was searching for, and Ayn was the prior to him regaining his memory version of Hayate. You can unlock Ayn by completing the game with every character and then going to Time Attack. As long as you rank in the top three, I believe, using Hayate, you can then enter your nickname as on the board, and if you put in Ayn, then Ayn will become playable in all modes except story mode, which will also allow you to play as a random character, which I don't know why that's not available from the start, because it basically doesn't allow you to unlock Ayn or the random character until you've beaten the game and gotten Ayn unlocked.
That's pretty crazy to think. You know, we thought that playing Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2X, what was it, 12 times in a row through?
Yeah.
Was a lot. This game, you have to do it 16 times. And to get the random character, what is it, 17 times?
Well, it's technically all 16 times, but then you got to go through a survival or time attack mode and just place on the rank board. So,
okay, so essentially you have to play through the entire core game 16 times in a row to unlock everything, essentially, other than the other costumes that are only unlockable through the various modes. Yes. That's ridiculous, you know?
Yeah, and Ayn does have a third costume, which is only done, I guess, as the ultimate difficult challenge by completing time attack mode in under 6 minutes with Ayn. So,
wow.
I think it's like five fights, so you'd have to basically, under 30 seconds, beat every character.
No, that's interesting. Okay. And what's the third costume for Ayn?
So the Ayn costume is a shirtless and red pants from the Dead or Alive 2 hardcore game. So that's really it for all the costumes. You can unlock theater mode. That's another additional thing you can do, which is done by,
right,
you know, beating the story mode with the character. It unlocks their endings, so you can watch all the endings you've unlocked thus far. You can name your Xbox. If you place first in single survival mode, whatever you type your name in, that your Xbox will actually rename itself to that name. If you win a match and hold X, A, and B at the same time until the replay starts, you should then get a slow-mo action with the Y button. There is a cool feature that some characters have. You can actually adjust different hairstyles and, like, things like that with different characters by pressing X or left trigger on some of the characters in the character select screen, which is kind of cool because some characters you can change up to like three different hairstyles.
That's interesting.
Or you can change their colors of the dress or whatever. So you can actually have additional kind of customization to the character. Let's see.
That's a nice touch if you're into the accessorization of your character and, you know, having unique look for them. That's definitely going to float your boat in this game. It is feature rich in the multiple costumes and then, you know, the hairstyles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really all this game is about. It's just kind of like, it seems like you're playing dress up with your character and just you want to make him as customizable as you can, I suppose. And that's really it. That's all this game really has to offer for extras. So that's all I have. All
right. Then we are on to our next segment.
Right. Oh my God. He on X Games mode.
Are you ready? Here is the X Games mode. Our personal tales of triumph, adrenaline-pumping gameplay, and sweat-inducing rampages.
Okay, now for our X Games mode, we both shared the same one. It's basically the only one that you can have in this game, really, and that would be
the final boss fight with Omega.
Yes, it would be the Omega boss fight. For me, the X Games mode moment really kicked in when I decided to play this on very hard. The challenge was ridiculous. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that you got lucky, very lucky, with your play because it took me so many attempts. Like, when I was talking to you, my soul was pretty much broken.
Yeah, there were many times you were actually wanting to quit.
Oh, yeah. That, you know what? Like we had mentioned with the last episode, there's always, with every game, a new challenge presented that is that near breaking point for us. And this, for me, truly was this boss fight on very hard. So why don't you tell us what made this particular moment your X Games mode moment for you?
So for me, the standout point in this was the fact that when I went to play it on very hard. Obviously, the biggest challenge with Omega is that you have such a distance between you and him and then the immediate start of the round. So
yes,
this makes it difficult because his most devastating attacks are his ranged attacks. And he will keep using them until you're dead very quickly. And not only that, but then you mentioned that if you don't do anything or somehow avoid attacks, whatever, you slowly lose health over time.
Yes. Yes, your health bar does diminish over time until it reaches just a sliver. It stops at like a hair's thickness of health left. Like he could sneeze or fart in your general direction and you're going to die. Yeah.
So with that being an added challenge, you really are sort of up against a timer. You can't really just dodge attacks the whole time. Even though it's relatively impossible in a way to dodge all the attacks or know it because it's so fast paced.
That and the randomization of the attacks was actually pretty good.
Oh yeah,
there was really no way to predict what he was going to throw at you next.
And they're very good at blocking. He had a double bladed like lightsaber-ish staff which he used to count.
Oh, you mean murder stick?
Yeah, that thing was pretty powerful. He would hit you with it up in close combat, and it would be
half your health.
Yep, very lethal. As long as he had a few melee grabs, which one I never experienced. You had experienced twice, I believe. Was the choke maneuver he did?
Yes, actually multiple times, because I was staying up close to him, like close enough to give him a hug. My technique was to use grabs to drain his health bar, and there was a maneuver that he did execute very rarely, and that was where he just straight up grabbed you by your neck, held you for about 2 seconds, and then just dropped you. It wasn't anything special, it was just that.
Yeah.
Apparently it was a very rare maneuver, because you didn't experience that at all in your playthroughs.
I never did. Basically, besides that, I mean, like I said, Omega had a array of different attacks. Most of them you really only dealt with if you were far away, which were the worst. Like I said, the range attacks. Getting in close is the only way to really put in damage on Omega. And like you had just said, Excalibur was, I got lucky, I feel like. And I'm not saying I don't feel like I did or not, but there was a point at the end, I had attempted probably defeating Omega about 25 times. And that's actually not bad, considering on very hard, you know, that's, I feel like, actually a pretty small number for, I'm not a fighter style type person. Like I almost can't stand fighter style games. It's just not my character of a gamer. So for me to be able to beat him in 25 tries is actually pretty good in my opinion.
And it didn't take very long because this guy mops the floor with your dead corpse pretty quick.
Yeah. My tactic to defeating him was I found out that when you put him on the ground, and by that I mean when you kick him, they eventually fall onto their back. When he right. falls onto his back, this creates an area of an effect damage attack, which sort of creates like a seismic blast from his body. And if you get hit by this seismic hit, it knocks you down. And Omega gets up almost instantly. The recovery time is almost, it's unexplainably fast. Now, I figured out that if you timed it right, you could actually avoid the seismic blast effect from him falling if you made a jump attack in the air at the right time. And when, of course, in the middle of jumping over his wave attack, you would be in the middle of creating your next actual attack move, which by the time he reacted to getting up, you would already be hitting him before he would have a chance to start in another attack form. This sort of caused a chain reaction, where I think it was about 4 times in a row, I avoided the attack that he did when he fell, and he got up, and I was already hitting him again before he got up. This I was able to do 4 times in a row, and that was what KO'd him for my final victory.
K.O. Yeah,
it was a very successful congratulations.
congratulations.
Oh, I forgot. I forgot about that.
Oh, yes. I was going to say it, but you said it right. We were on the same wavelength. You read my mind or something. That popped into my head like 2 seconds before you said it.
But yeah, that was my victory moment. And I would say it was not as stressed out as I could have been, I guess. I definitely got up there a couple times with how stressed the situation was, because wanting to beat the game and you're that close, it's like a tease in a way. You just want to get over it, get it finished and done with. And
especially when he's one hit and you're one hit, you know, and the next blow that makes connection determines the fight and determines if you got to start over again and who knows how many more attempts it's going to take, or you can end it right now.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'd say for me, that was my X-Game moment. There was definitely times facing him where I would get down to that last bit of health he had, one hit away, and he would do some type of devastating lunge attack. The lunge attack is always what gets me.
And it knocks you back so far.
Yep. So that's it for me. I mean, that's really all I had to say about Omega's fight.
I pretty much had the same experience. Mine went very much different from yours with the amount of attempts that it took.
You had an aggravated amount of attempts. I think you doubled my attempt count.
I'm pretty sure I was in the 50 to 60 range, and it was such an unlucky amount of attempts. I mean, there were times where he would literally KO me before I moved 3 steps. Like, I remember talking with you when I was playing, and I was like, oh, he hit me 21 times, and oh, he's hit me 27 times, now 33 times, you know? It was just a constant barrage of attacks from a distance. It was almost like it got harder. And, you know, at that point, I started using running to get up close to him as fast as possible so that he didn't have the chance to shoot out any, you know, lightning balls or maybe even do a flame attack or his seismic blast, which didn't just encompass his area in a circle. it spread out from him from where it originated. So it doesn't matter if you're on the outside of the ring or right next to him, you're going to get hit by it if you don't jump over it. And you have such a small window to jump over that. And on top of that, it devastates your already diminishing health. So it just adds up to a very stressful time. What boiled down to my success of this situation was I, instead of going for attacks, which it seemed at the time, I was so stressed and so flustered that I really couldn't think to coordinate an effective attack strategy. And I just basically kept mashing the same button combination to my disdain and knocking him over, which proved to not work as it hurt me more than it hurt him. And in the end, I was only basically killing myself in the process, but faster. So I started to do grab attacks. I would run up on him and I would just berate him with grab attacks as fast as I could, spamming the buttons that I knew did grabs or that did short jabs or punches. Those would stop him from being able to trigger his abilities because I was executing the moves so fast. And the grabs ended up proving very effective because whenever you did grab him, it took out a good, I'd say 20% of his health. And that was enough to get an edge. If you were able to grab him in succession 2 times before he had a chance to hit you at least once, you had the advantage and a clear chance at possibly winning the match. Now, if you could grab him 3 times in a row, you're almost guaranteed to have it, unless somehow he was able to pull a frame-perfect maneuver, which he did on me many a times. It really got down to the wire when I discovered this new technique. I was pretty much just dead inside. I was a hollow person. I was a shell of a man, defeated, broken, and humiliated. I was just done. And when it came down to it, the grab attacks shined a new light of hope on being able to pass and get through the game, because as you had stated, I was pretty much ready to quit long before I'd actually persevered until the end. It just seemed impossible. Just kind of like dumb luck, really. Maybe it was hard enough to require a skillful approach, but in the end, it didn't seem to do so. It actually required less than a non-skillful approach to beat the game. But ultimately, the game provided quite a stressful and sweat-inducing experience, especially in the end when I had my new hope, thinking that my new technique could possibly win me the game, which it did rather quickly once I had perfected it. So that for me would be my X Games moment, as well is that final boss on Very Hard. Definitely presented quite a challenge for anyone who isn't experienced or proficient with the controls. Obviously a button masher am I as well. It showed in the amount of attempts that it took to topple the final boss, but I did it regardless.
Yeah, I'd say that's all this game had to offer. Wow. Was that Omega fight.
Yeah, really. The Omega fight was like, okay, there you go. Have fun. That was the real challenge. If the whole game was like that, I don't think I would have enjoyed it. But, if the game was closer to that, and if the game shed some light on some kind of a story, it really would have been fantastic. Probably would have been a crown jewel in the series.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, if you've got nothing else to add, then I think we're good to go to our next segment.
All right.
Let's get X-rated, where we rank the game based on our evaluation of 10 core gaming elements.
It will be you going first today, Soft Mike.
All right. So, start with our graphics score. This game got an 80.
Whoa.
Yeah, I thought this graphics was pretty dang good. Levels look beautiful and well made. The models were probably the best feature of the game.
Oh yeah.
Difficulty, I got a 5.
Oh
yeah, a little high.
Yeah.
And the reason why is because, like, as I say, is because I believe a game that has selectable difficulty, no matter how bad it may be balanced, should at least get a 5. It deserves lower, but I believe a game that has at least a ability to select your curve, depending on the gamer you are, lets you experience the game. So the balance wasn't very good, I would say. They were typically in moments where you were progressing through stages so quickly that it was mind-numbing in a way.
Right.
You button mashed, and if you won, you won. And if you didn't, you didn't. And typically, you find yourself winning more than losing a lot of the time. So the overall aspect of the game. The game was too easy for it to really have a challenge. AI, I gave this game a 4. Thought the AI was pretty dumb, and it typically stuck to whatever moves they knew, but at the same time, you could easily overpower any AI that was playing. It was a very easy experience, and I felt like the AI didn't present much of a challenge outside of a player versus player experience would be much more enticing. Single player experience, I also gave it a 4. I felt like it was very lackluster in terms of the story, which is a huge element of the single player experience. It didn't offer much playback where you would go to play the game and you would basically wonder, I mean, why you were winning so often. Even on the highest difficulty, you had tons of different modes. I guess pretty much any mode that you could think of minus a system like multiplayer option, which was nice, yes, but you really, I think this game was much more of a multiplayer kind of game than it was a single player, especially with the ability to really only unlock generic kind of rewards like costumes and one character. I mean, really, that's what it comes down to. Multiplayer, I gave this game a 5, solely based on the fact that you could have much more fun, in my opinion, playing this game in multiplayer than a single player, with the only benefit in single player being that you could play the story mode and actually progress through the game like the developers wanted you to, where multiplayer, you could either challenge yourself against another player or really duke it out and just double up on the AI, and if you were very good at the combos, you could actually do very well. So,
yeah,
that's the only, I think, benefit of multiplayer. Design, this game got a 6. Felt like design was pretty well done. Levels were enticing and nicely made. Some levels that allowed you to actually transfer level areas where you could actually knock them out of the initial area into a whole new area of the level, which is a really cool design. But
yeah, it was.
Other than that, I mean, for a fighting game, I guess that's all you really have. There's no need to explore or anything. So to me, that's really what's missing out of a game. Which, like you said, you can't really base that off of anything. It's a fighting game. Controls. This is the shining star. This got a 10.
Whoa!
The controls in this game were actually very well done, especially with the fact that controls were customizable. You could completely map the buttons is an exceptional feature, and that is what makes any game a shining star in the controls. Features, I gave this game a 7. This game was very feature-packed for a fighting game. You had a lot of different modes, nothing that outside the fact that you couldn't play it on multiplayer. Basically, for a fighting game, was the only thing, as I've mentioned several times, that you couldn't do. So, replayability, I gave this game a 3. This game has a very low replayability. The reason why, it just feels like a chore. As anything, this game makes you play the story mode 16 times. At that point,
yeah,
you really kind of ask yourself, do you want to come back and play again? But I don't think you'd want to come back and keep playing it over and over again because it's the same levels and the same enemies. Soundtrack, our last category, got a 5 out of 10. And the only reason...
Hey.
Oh, you matched?
Yes, same.
Hey, so, the reason why I gave it a 5 is because it had licensed music, which is, to me, the bare minimum for a 5. Although it didn't have anything beyond that that was really worth, I guess, feeling like I was elementally in the game and enjoying it. I don't believe you had the ability to use a custom soundtrack if you wanted.
I didn't see that option.
So I assume that that's also limiting there to that ability. But yeah, that's the only reason why I gave this game a soundtrack score of a 5 is just Aerosmith. They had 3 songs in here. You only really hear at the credit scene. There was a couple of enjoyable of the cutscene movies at the end. So total it up. This tallies up to a 57. This is a grade C. It's a high C.
Wow.
But yeah, so and then
that's interesting.
My final ranking puts this game underneath NASCAR Thunder 2002 and above Air Force Delta Storm at spot number 12.
Okay, that's very fair. That's very fair.
So, yeah.
All right, for my official scoring of Dead or Alive 3, for graphics, I gave a 7. I felt they did a really good job, as I elaborated on it before. The crispness of the video and the range of textures, colors, and modeling of the environments and the characters themselves. They did a very good job. The physics as well, the fluid animation of the body physics, the hair physics, and the costume or clothing physics really was done well. It definitely is a pretty game. And for being a launch title, that says a lot, because a lot of launch titles really don't utilize the full potential of the console that they come out on. So it was nice to see a launch title that looked this good. The difficulty. Now, going against your argument, SoftMic, even though it did have a selectable difficulty, I believe it was executed very poorly, as I've already mentioned as well, in the review, where I gave this game a 3. The difficulty was selectable, yes, but it was just executed so badly in terms of how just some random person who's never played the game before could easily just pick up a controller and button mash fumble their way through, even on the hardest difficulty, or in all game modes, from start to finish of the campaign, at least 4 times in an hour or less. It seems a bit underwhelming to me. AI. I gave this game a 3. Also, in my opinion, very dumb, and unable to really give you much of a challenge, except for the last one, obviously, because of how cheap and OP they made him. The AIs you fight prior are just mainly cannon fodder, unless you run into one where you just have a hard time with, which did happen to me. They seemed to be very predictable in what they were able to do or what they were good at, and it really just didn't give you that feel like you were playing a smart AI that was capable, more or less one that just was good at something specific that made it cheap or hard for you to progress, and you had to adapt to that AI's fighting style. The single player experience, I gave a 5. I think it met the minimum requirements to supply you with a basic game to play, even though it lacked all counts of any context related to character, structure, backstory, and game story, period. The game had a good tutorial-esque system. It wasn't really clearly marked as a tutorial, but if you chose to do the sparring mode, it essentially acted as one. And like I'd already mentioned as well, they did a very good job of executing it. And if you stuck with it and did all of the exercises in this mode, it really got you familiar with the game. And if anything, left you with an idea of how to execute certain moves and give you a new level of proficiency if you were to try and go on and learn some of the combos or specific moves that this game has for each one of the characters. You had a general roadmap of what to press to get the job done. So for that, it helped with the single player experience, whereas not really much else did. The tag team mode was fine and dandy, but it was really best suited for multiplayer, which is the next topic. Multiplayer, I gave a 6. It didn't do very well for me, but it did better than single player, as it gave you more life to live in the game. I would rather not play through this game's campaign, whether or not I have 16 different characters to choose from, and that's mainly due to the fact that there is no real story to the game to follow, and the independent character stories are very hard to follow as well. So multiplayer breathed a new breath of life into this game that gave it more longevity, in my opinion, than the single player mode could have ever done. The tag battle mode was actually pretty fun. Versus, maybe if you care about fighters to the extent of being competitive in this spectrum, then this would be a good game for you, or this mode would be good for you and make multiplayer more fun. Maybe you could give multiplayer a higher score if this was more your style. As for me and SoftMic, fighting games generally aren't really the kind of game that we tend to flock toward or would choose over other games. So in this area, I can't really derive much from multiplayer going head-to-head with somebody other than this. Now, if this game had online play, such as maybe System Link or actual full-fledged Xbox Live, that'd be the game-changer for this multiplayer. For sure, it would score much higher. Design. I gave this game a 6. This game was designed very well in terms of the environments and the arenas That was a refreshing thing about this game, and somewhat of a redeeming quality for the playthrough of it, was the ability to knock your opponent out of the arena into a whole new area. That just added a whole new depth and something exciting that I really hadn't experienced much of, except for more modern fighting games that I've played recently. The characters were very well designed and put together. Their features of their faces and the way that they were modeled definitely did a good job with that and paid a lot of attention to capturing the look of a human being in a 3D modeled environment. They did a very good job with that. Controls. I gave the game an 8. I couldn't praise it as much as you. Even though the controls were precise, they were responsive and tight, and they did what they were supposed to do, they required a very high level of skill to execute properly, where I had spoken earlier on frame-perfect execution. These controls do not give you any leeway. That's what made the exercises hard to complete in the later stages, where the moves that you had to pull off in order to chain combos off of them required a very specific frame-perfect execution in order to make them actually work in the way that you intended to use them. And that kind of was a drawback of how much of a skill level it took to execute these maneuvers, although they did work like they were supposed to once you happened to accidentally press them at the exact time that they were meant to be pressed. That's the hardest part about fighting games, and this one definitely presented the challenge as adequately as any other good fighting game would do so. Features. I gave this game a 6. It had a pretty good set of features. It gave you enough to give you what a game should give you. The multiplayer modes, and the single player mode, as well as the training mode, survival, and so on. But it also, along with those modes, gave you a pointless mode or two. One being the watch mode, which I thought was just a complete waste of space.
Yeah, that was
getting the ability to just watch two characters fight each other, that was just underwhelming at that. But as far as the other features go, they did a good job with putting them together and structuring them to still give you something to do in the game and to give the game some kind of a longevity of life, whether it be the tag battle mode, which did execute very well and once again was probably my favorite part about this entire game. More so if you had someone to play it with, but either way, tag battle mode still provided some kind of new element that made the game more fun than playing single player alone. Replayability. I gave it a 2. I did not see there being a point to going back to this game, for me at least, and probably speaking for you too, Soft Mike. On top of the fact that this game was just lacking a lot of things in terms of making it more accessible, other than basically one mode that we really enjoyed, I don't see ever picking this game back up again. It was a nice experience, but it just really doesn't have anything that would bring me back ever. So, yeah. Now our last category, soundtrack. I gave it a 5, and that's pretty ground level. As you have stated, Soft Mike, that's what you believe would be the standard score, and I think this game is deserving of that. The soundtrack was easily drowned out. It didn't add to the action, and it brought nothing to the table. But I think at this point, the only thing that keeps the score from going any lower is probably just paying a little bit of respect to the amount of effort that went into creating a soundtrack like this one, with the fact that it has 23 independent tracks. Aside from the fact that there is licensed music from Aerosmith in the credit reel, so it doesn't even count to me. Tally all that up, the final score is 51. Grade C. And for me, it's a low C. And then lastly, for me, my final rankings of the launch titles, I wound up putting Dead or Alive 3 in slot number 13, just above Air Force Delta Storm and below NASCAR Thunder 2002. Final thoughts on the game would be, you know, it was a very quick in and out kind of game. You really experienced everything you needed to in an hour.
Yeah, there was a lot it was lacking a length. It didn't have any length to it. Not only that, but the way it portrays a fighting game makes the game seem too easy. I just think it needed to offer more.
I mean, ultimately, it was a lack of a story and also poor execution in terms of the balance of difficulty, where It was too easy in places where it shouldn't have been and too hard in places where I don't think it should have been. It was a little bit of a mismatch when it came to that. And then, obviously, the glaring issue with this one would be what we've already talked about 10,000 times is the lack of a story. So, you know, with the ability to play this game through, you know, four times, and that would be on every difficulty in an hour, that's very underwhelming for me, and part of the reason why the replayability is just so low. Any final thoughts from you, Soft Mike?
I think we've pretty much covered our full analysis on this game, man.
Okay. Well, as always, we'd love to hear from you. If you have any experiences with this game or any kind of nostalgia, please share away in the comments section. You can always write in to us as well and let us know what your thoughts are. If we missed anything, we'd also love to know. Until then, you can stay tuned for our next game.
Project Gotham Racing.
Yes, I'm excited for this title. I'm definitely a big-time racing game fan, so this is definitely going to be right up my alley.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Get to test out the steering wheels again, too.
Yes, it's going to be a very interesting experience.
Oh, yeah. With extensive experience in playing Project Gotham Racing 2, I'm excited to get into the one that started it all.
Heck yeah, man.
All right. Thank you all for listening. And until next time, I'm Excalibur.
And I'm Soft Mike.
And we will see you in the next one. Hello, loyal listeners. Excalibur here. Thank you for listening. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a supporter by going to our Patreon and pledging a couple bucks. Not only does this grant you exclusive access to early episodes and other content only available to supporters, but you also get to know you're making a difference by helping keep the lights on so that we can keep providing excellent content for you. Also consider joining the OG Xbox modding community on Facebook, where you can find anything you may need or want from the most trustworthy and quality-forward bunch of innovators keeping this amazing console alive to today. You can also become a part of the action by submitting a game for us to review via 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you may listen. Also consider liking and sharing our social media. You can find us on Twitter via our Twitter handle, ThinkBoxPodcast, or on Facebook at Thinking Inside the Box. You can also write into us via email at thinkinginsidetheboxpodcast@outlook.com. Until the next time, thank you for listening, thank you for your patronage, and we will see you in the next one.